Hello and welcome to IT1, Semester 2, Module 13. First we're going to have the Chapter 12 quiz from last week, and I'm going to do that. And then Grace is going to continue on with the lecture. So everyone is in their chat windows, so we'll go ahead and start. Number 1. How many active partitions can a hard drive have? The choices are A, 1, B, 2, C, 4, or D, 8. Answer now.
This is under
Windows.
Any more guesses?
This is under Windows, yes. Okay, C is correct. It is 4.
What?
And I have to mute my jaws because it keeps saying...
Hang on.
No.
Well, primary.
Oh, 1.
Active partitions.
Oh, active partitions.
Oh,
you're
you
right.
Got it. It's mixed up.
Okay, I did mix it up.
Right.
What is the question?
It does say how many active
partitions. That's called me not reading.
Yeah, the answer is 1, everybody.
one active, 4 one. Primary.
Setting the number of active partitions any greater than 1 under a Windows Master Boot record will give you the answer, missing operating system.
Okay. Number 2. Which system tool consolidates files to enable faster access? Is it A, file attributes, B, computer management, C, defragmentation? Answer now. That's correct. Defragmenter, they have defragmentation, but it's disk defragmenter. Number 3. A new graphics card is installed in a computer. When the computer is powered on, the default drivers are loaded, but some of the applications do not work properly. What should the user do to improve the graphics card performance? A. Check the Microsoft website to find the latest drivers. B. Check the website of the manufacturer for the latest drivers. C. Configure the application to run correctly with the new graphics card. D. Configure the graphics card settings correctly in the start menu / disk format. Answer now. And the answer is B. Always the manufacturer's website is where we go for the latest and hopefully greatest drivers for whatever device we're talking about. Number 4. Which is the default Windows update setting? A. Automatically download recommended updates for my computer and install them. B. Download updates for me, but let me choose when to install them. C. Notify me, but don't automatically download or install them. Or D. Turn off the automatic updates. Answer now.
That depends if it's XP or 7, actually.
Yes, it does.
Okay, for XP, the answer is it's set to automatically download or install them. What does it do for 7? Because I don't know.
It's the same, but in XP, actually, by default, it's off until you go into that applet in control panel and tell it to be automatic.
Yeah, it is
actually. No, it actually...
No,
really?
It is.
I thought it
yeah,
ever
since... Unless you toggle it in the out-of-box wizard. Because when the out-of-box wizard comes up, it asks you whether you want automatic updates on. And if you click it there, yes, it'll be on. But if you don't, Brian's correct, it's off. And then you've got to go in and it screams at you on taskbar balloons going, set up automatic updates, set up automatic updates.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, well, and then once automatic updates is on, once you even click, I want turn on automatic updates, so that's going to be what you get.
A lot of OEM installs also
skip
the OOB. So if you've got an installer disk that you've made up as a blind person that skips the OOB, yes, it defaults to off. So that's worth mentioning.
They want automatic, though.
Okay. I don't.
So if they ask,
nobody does.
Yeah, nobody does. But if they ask, that's what we say. All right, number 5. Which Windows XP function allows a system to roll back to a previous state? Is it A, automatic update? B, NT backup? C, restore point? D, scan reg? Answer now. C is correct. The answer that they have is restore... I wish they would call it system restore, because that's what the name of the stupid thing actually is, but no.
But the actual technology...
The actual tool is... The actual thing that's going to let you go back is the restore point.
The actual thing.
The actual thing is a restore...
Oh, okay, I see how they're wording it. Okay, I didn't catch it that way. Oops. All right, so they are right. Number 6. Which two file systems can be used by Windows XP? Choose 2. So this would be a yes or no. Is it A, DOS? Yeah, no, that's correct. Is it B, EXT3?
I wish.
No, that's a Linux file system. Is it C, FAT32? Yes is correct. Is it DHPFS. I'm not exactly sure what that is, but the answer
that
is
was
no.
HPFS, not NTFS.
Yeah.
Yes, HPFS is the one they've just asked about.
That
okay,
is High Performance File System that yeah. came with OS 2.
Okay.
And if OS 2 had any more supporters, it'd be OS 3. Go ahead.
How about NTFS? That's correct. And the other choice, Vista, doesn't even make sense, and we've already picked our two. So NTFS and FAT32 like are the two file systems. Yeah,
has
just
any,
like DOS is an operating system.
Has
well.
Anyone
DOS
seen IBM screen reader?
System, not a
fuss.
Yeah,
yeah,
I still
correct.
Have it here somewhere in a box.
I've heard it was good.
I've seen their homepage reader. I never knew they had a screen reader.
Way, yeah, back quite a ways now.
Yeah, they had one for OS 2. It was.
And I have OS 2 on 32 floppy disks.
You realize that, like, all 31 of the 32 of them are going to work, right? Just as long as you're aware of that. That when you go to put in disk 32, that'll be it and it won't install.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, number 7. While performing maintenance on a computer, a technician finds a program listed in the registry that is unavailable on the Start All Programs menu. What is the probable cause of this problem? A. The program failed to uninstall properly. B. The program has been disabled in the BIOS. C. The program is incompatible with the operating system. D. A program installed device driver. A recently installed device driver is incompatible with this program. Answer now. Yes, A is correct. The program failed to uninstall properly. Somebody needs to do a better uninstall for this thing. Number 8. In which folder are most applications found in Windows Vista? The Windows folder. B. The Applications folder. C. The Program Files folder. D. The Windows System 32 subfolder. Answer now. That's correct. The Program Files folder. Anybody ever notice how hard it is to read Braille when you've got cold hands?
Actually, Gemma had an interesting thing the other day.
Right now.
She's got a machine that has Program Files folder on it, but it doesn't have a progr-1 directory. Because however she copied it across onto the file system, the long file name version didn't actually shorten it to progr-1.
Yeah, I saw that.
Does anything work?
Yeah. Apparently it all works fairly well. That doesn't actually cause any grief, but you can't go progr-1. I remember reading some anti-Microsoft documentation back in the sort of 1995-96 when Windows 95 was being released, and they kept referring to Microsoft as micros-1.
I'm here.
Yeah, excellent.
There you go.
Yep, you are.
Okie dokie, here we go with number 9. What is the purpose of a system management server in a Windows Vista environment? A. It can be used to deploy updated hardware, abstraction layers, or AJL software. B. It can be used to install wireless client operating systems across a wireless network. C. It can be used to hold the various unattended.txt files used for corporate image deployment. D. It can be used to manage Windows updates, deploy an operating system, or perform inventory management. Answer now. Yeah, it's D, because it's the only one that really makes sense, and it's the one they gave us the most information about. So yes, this server can be used to manage Windows updates, deploy an operating system, or perform inventory management.
Dude, you read my mind, because that's exactly what I said to Carrie seriously, like, 40 minutes ago when I was writing this.
Number 10. What Windows utility is used to create a partition on a newly installed second hard drive? Is it A. Task Scheduler, B. Device Manager, C. Partition Manager, or D. You forgot D.
Oops. I think I was taking it out. Whatever it is, it isn't the right answer, so don't worry about it.
I think so. I don't know.
A, B, and C are wrong, so whatever D was, it must be D.
What are the three choices? What was the question?
It's what is the partition utility, and you left D out,
what
which was actually the right answer.
What Windows utility is used to create a partition on a newly installed second hard drive?
So we actually need to know what D
is. D is disk management.
Ah, there we go. Good.
Yeah, D is disk management. And it's funny because I saw an asterisk here and there's nothing next to it. And I'm going, okay. So I think I shall just...
We don't need to answer that question.
But I think I will just fix it so that when I save it, I'll have it.
Fair enough.
Okay. Wow. That's quite amusing. Number 11. What is virtual memory? Is it A, RAM that does not need to be refreshed? B, a swap file on the hard drive? C, memory that is located inside the processor and inside the processor housing? Or D, extra memory on the motherboard that is accessed when the video RAM is exhausted? That's correct. Oh, I see where disk management went. It accidentally got stuck at the end of question 11. Okay. Yes, virtual memory is a swap file that the computer reads from when more memory is needed. Number 12. What is the probable cause of a Windows Vista computer running slowly, having delayed response to user and having delayed response to user input? Is it A, the computer does not meet the minimum hardware requirements for running hang on. Okay, this is... I'm mixed up now. So it looks like this is another one that has...
Hold on just a second.
Okay, it just looks like two... It looks like two answers got smushed together, so I'm just trying to figure out.
Hold on, look.
I'll repeat the question again. What is the probable cause of a Windows Vista computer running slowly and having delayed response to user input? Is it A, the computer does not meet the minimum hardware requirements for running Aero? Is it B, a process is using most of the CPU resources? C, the index service setting in the advanced options panel are incorrect? Or D, UAC has not been enabled in the computer account applet in the control panel? Answer now. I don't think that's the right answer. No, the answer, guys, is actually...
It depends if you come from Western Australia. The answer is definitely A if you come from Western Australia. But if you're blind, the answer is definitely B, because the first thing that JAWS does is shut Aero down. I'd take it.
Yeah.
The question is A.
The answer to the question says the computer does not meet the minimum hardware requirements for running Aero. And it really does mess things up for sighted people that don't have the resources to use it. I've seen...
I thought Aero usually shuts itself down, though, if it doesn't see sufficient system resources. Aero just gets turned off. Oh,
Aero is bad.
Well, it's not if you can see, Grace. Aero is the new swishy desktop interface that has, like, fading windows and animations and stuff. It's actually quite nice if you've got the resources to run it. But it doesn't work well with assistive technology.
I was going to say, you know, for why is Vista running slow? Because it's Vista, but...
That should be answer E.
No, well, if you applied Service Pack 1, Vista actually became fairly reasonable.
Vista SP1 is actually good.
Yeah, I mean, Vista got such a bad rap for its original release that by the time that Service Pack 1 came out and did fix the problems, nobody forgave Microsoft. But you can bet if Apple released an update to their operating systems that fixed all this stuff, we'd all just go back and go, oh, well, thank you, Apple, and nobody would mention another thing.
You know, weirdly, that's kind of true and strange.
Well, I mean, Microsoft did release Windows 7, too, and, I mean, people just skip over
that's
Vista, so it's not
why.
Like they blame Microsoft. They just skip it.
Yep. Okay,
iOS 4 has multitasking. My Nokia's done that for 11 years, but this is a cool new thing.
That is true, and Apple is quite proprietary, at least with books and things, too.
Well, I think Jamie put it nicely the other day on Twitter. He writes to NVDA. He said, why does everybody blame the operating system? Why does everyone blame the screen reader under Windows, yet they never get around to blaming the screen reader under the Mac? Because it's got its own set of problems. You don't want to look at the log and see how many times VoiceOver falls over and restarts. Moving on.
Yeah, because... And I was kind of interested in that, and I think he's actually right. Number 13, after troubleshooting a computer, a technician proposes F8 during the boot process. Oh, presses F8 during the boot process and selects disable automatic restart on system failure from the advanced options menu. Which problem is the technician trying to solve? Is it A, the computer displayed a BSOD? B, the computer locked up without any error messages? C, a device or service failed to start when the computer booted? Or D, the computer was continually restarting without displaying the desktop? Answer now.
D or A could cause that.
Yeah, the answer I have here is A, but D also seems logical to me. I'm not sure which one is
actually
right.
What was D? I missed that.
It continually restarts and won't shut the desktop.
Yeah, I'd take A or D.
I would have gone with... I could see it being more of a problem with D, but...
I think the point is that they're actually taking action and that there has been a blue screen that they just missed and swore at bitterly. So that's the understanding. You know, the blue screen went flick, memory dump, and they couldn't read it. And the idea is that they wanted to actually see what was on that BSOD. So A is technically more correct, even though D can happen.
Sean, could you just repeat that question again so I can absorb it?
Yeah, the question is, after troubleshooting a computer, a technician presses F8 during the boot process and selects Disable Automatic Start on System Failure from the Advanced Options menu. Which problem is the technician trying to solve? That's the question.
When a blue screen
you reckon
comes
that D was more appropriate?
Aye.
A is more appropriate.
The computer displayed a BSOD.
Thank you.
But D could also have been another possible problem, but...
Have you ever seen a blue screen? I'd hope for your sake that you haven't, but have you ever seen one?
Lots of blue screens.
Oh, sorry, you run... Assistive technology, of course. How silly of me. And what you can actually do is that F8 option allows you to stop it from automatically restarting, so you can read what's on the blue screen so that when you call tech support, they can theoretically help you fix it. That's the rationale behind that. Most of the time on a new computer, I don't know if anybody else does this, I turn off automatically restart on blue screen under system as soon as the operating system is installed.
I think I'm going to do that.
It does also mean that if the machine blue screens, the fan is going to howl and the machine's just going to sit there. But you can actually get somebody to come in and tell you what the problem is rather than...
I might actually know.
Drew did find a utility that would dump it. Blue screen... I can't remember what he called it last week, but he actually did find a utility that would show us the output of the blue screens if the machine comes back up.
I think it was just BSD or blue screen dumper.
Something like that. I think he's off asleep after his fun talking to his testing center about CompTIA A+ certification, which he's about to go and take.
Oh, okay. Number 14. Which CLI command is the best command to copy the contents of one hard drive to another? Is it A, copy? B, ncopy, C, xcopy, or D, zcopy, or zcopy. Answer now. Yep, xcopy, C is correct. It's xcopy. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of your quiz.
Thanks for being understanding to Canadians here.
Robocopy or whatever?
That only comes
well,
with Vista
and Well,
this assumes
we're doing it from the command line.
Robocopy is a command
copy
line.
Is command.
Oh, it is? Okay. I was sorry,
but it
I was thinking of TerraCopy.
It's not native.
It's only native to Vista and up.
But I'd agree with you. That's what I said. I said that was a stupid question because most people would just use Robocopy.
No, they... Well, it depends on how knowledgeable
they are. If I were doing that, I would seriously look into it.
I've seen people just go Control-A, Control-C, paste. That's what I usually see people do, and then when it bombs out on system volume information,
I've
they go,
it.
Oh...
It has pretty nerdy command line switches, that Robocopy. You got to spend a few minutes with the slash question parameters to learn that one.
Oh, there's one big problem with Robocopy that I will warn people about, because we got bitten by it as well. Gemma was using it to sync the contents of her laptop with her desktop when she was doing her Unix, her uni work, and she forgot to include the XO switch, which means do not copy old files. And what was actually happening was she was syncing from the old machine to the old machine to the new machine, and then she was syncing back from the new machine to the old machine. And if she synced the wrong direction, it would put the old files back.
So she'd lose revisions of her work.
That's right.
Am I hearable? Oh, yes, I am.
Yeah.
Cool. I just turned on AutoVox.
Let's find out whether you're actually gating off, though. I don't think you are. Oh, yes, you are. There you go.
Yep, I get 3 seconds.
Yep, about that much time.
All right, let's begin today's lecture about laptops. I'd like to call it How to Insult Your Student's Intelligence in 10 Minutes or Less.
Just move the microphone up a bit. You are so much louder than Sean.
There we go. Better?
That's better.
There we go.
All right. Today we're going to review and expand on maintaining laptops and other portable devices. Laptops are different from desktops in that they use wireless technologies such as Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. They use batteries, and they may be used in conjunction with docking stations and port replicators. They also have proprietary components rather than the standard ones found in desktops. So every laptop model and every laptop manufacturer uses different parts. You'll need to be familiar with not only laptops but also all of their accessories such as external, optical, and storage and docking devices. And anyone who's owned a laptop or works on laptops, Brian especially, would be able to attest that there are so many different little accessories that you get to be familiar with when dealing with laptops and their owners and all of those little accessories.
Did anyone see the funny cartoon where it had the Apple, I can't remember what it was, but it was this tiny little picture of something? And then it had this wheelbarrow of accessories that you could connect up to it. So the thing was about the size of a postage stamp, but there was this wheelbarrow of stuff that you could drag along behind you and plug into it.
Oh, yes, the iFlea.
I saw that.
I think it had the flea market and the things like that.
Yeah.
All right. Some manufacturers require that you are certified in their brand of laptops before completing repairs on them. If you're not certified, this may void the laptop's warranty. So make sure you check the warranty and see what the terms and conditions are before you go breaking into your laptop.
Toshiba is very heavy on that.
Dell can be as well, I think.
Yep.
After the warranty period, though, honestly, it's a much less of a worry. Because if you break it, well, then you're just going to have to send it in to get it fixed, and that's what you'd do anyway.
And that's quite expensive, especially if you've done damage to it that you will then have to pay for on the user's behalf because you broke it.
Has anyone not connected to a wireless network? Oh, good. Well, then I won't go over all the wonderful things that you can do with wireless networks because you already know. So, as I said, we will not be insulting your intelligence by describing that.
I have to say I was rather disappointed by some
unless,
of things.
Unless, of course, you live in Perth, and to get rid of the termites, you live in houses with concrete walls, and then you may not be connecting to your wireless network as reliably as you'd like because there's a brick wall in the way. Double brick wall, in fact. It's a big problem over here.
One thing I was wondering about wireless networks is how do those Wi-Fi SD card things work? I think you said before that they come up as an ad hoc network that you join. Do they then show up under my network places, or is it something else?
That Wi-Fi SD cards, as far as the new funky ones are concerned, I have no idea because I've never seen them. I just know that the older ones, like the wireless SD cards in PDAs, come up as a wireless network card once the drivers are installed. But the new ones, no, I haven't seen them in the wild. I wouldn't know. And to be honest, until they become more mainstream and enter my budget, I don't really care.
Makes sense. We were just talking about wireless networks, and I figured I'd throw that out there.
Fair enough. Okay. Bluetooth is a short-range wireless communication method. Bluetooth devices can connect to 7 other devices to create a wireless personal area network, or PAN, or WPAN. For example, my iPod may have a Bluetooth keyboard, GPS device, and headset connected. And also, something I'm going to look into, it could be tethered to my cell phone receiving internet. So that would be my wireless personal area network.
Does anybody remember the days of the 6600 when it could only connect to one Bluetooth device at a time and you couldn't convince any blind person that that was true until they tried it and spent 6 hours belting their head against a wall and realized that you weren't joking?
That's why I have a hotspot program on my phone.
I'm quite happy
Bluetooth,
about that.
I'll just make it Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
We've actually found the hotspot program drains the battery faster than you can charge it, which is why Grace is looking at seeing whether there's an option for the iPod to allow Bluetooth tethering, because you can't charge the battery fast enough to replenish the power if you're using JoyQ Spot or walking hotspot.
Unless you found differently. Have you found it different?
Well, I have found the thing gets rather hot, but I mean, I've been too scared to leave it on too long, because once I accidentally did it in the States, and I got a $200 bill for that, so I've been very, very worried about that ever since.
Fair enough. Okay, this technical specification is described by the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, IEEE. 802.15.1 standard. The standard is very testable, so remember what it is. Bluetooth can handle voice, music, video, and data. It is ideal for devices such as laptops, printers, cameras, PDAs, cell phones, hands-free headsets. The distance of your WPAN depends on how much power the device is put out. There are three classes of Bluetooth devices. Class 1, maximum permitted power in milliwatts is 100. Approximate distance is 330 feet or 100 meters. This might be Bluetooth speakers or something of that nature. Class 2, maximum permitted power is 2.5 milliwatts. Approximate distance is 33 feet or 10 meters, and this will be your networking type of stuff, like your walking, your like Bluetooth modems and all of that good things. Class 3, maximum permitted power is 1 milliwatt, and the approximate distance is 3 feet or 1 meter. Possibly a Bluetooth keyboard would be in this class. Bluetooth operates in the 2.4 GHz radio frequency. This is part of the Industrial Science and Medical, or ISM, band. What else can you guys think of that operates in this frequency?
Cordless phones. I just solved my friend's wireless problem.
Oh yeah.
My wireless headset.
Definitely.
Microwave. Uh-huh. Ever tried talking on your FreeTalk Logitech headset whilst you're cooking dinner? It doesn't work well.
That's what you get.
Yep, that's basically it. Bluetooth has several unique features that are kind of cool. The first is something called adaptive frequency hopping, or AFH. Now, we're talking about all of these devices that run in the 2.4 GHz spectrum. This allows Bluetooth devices to actually hop between frequencies to avoid interference. So it might be able to move off of the frequency that your cordless phone is using at the time.
I wanted to add a device to the list. Treadmills.
Yeah? Really?
My friend... Yeah, that's how we solved my friend's wireless problem, because he said, oh, it looks like whenever they use the treadmill downstairs, it messes with my internet. I said, you're on Wi-Fi, right? And he's like, yeah. I said, you had the problem whenever the phone rang, it disconnected. He goes, yeah, that's a cordless phone, isn't it? Ah, that's the problem. We need to change your Wi-Fi channel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess the computer in the treadmill put out interference.
Well, we had an interesting problem the other day. This frequency hopping is all well and good in practice, and according to Ericsson, who looked into this quite heavily, you don't get much interference at all between Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. But given that they were manufacturing phones at the time, I wonder if they had vested interests in saying that. Grace found that if she turned off the Wi-Fi on her BrailleSense, all of a sudden the iPod was able to talk to the Braille display much more easily. So it theoretically can get
Skype
out of the way.
I was on Skype when she figured that one out.
Yeah, I was like, oh now it's not so slow, cool!
We were both kind of amazed.
And yeah. This is a gotcha. On a lot of laptops and stuff, the wireless and Bluetooth aerials are in fairly close proximity, and if you have them both on at once, sometimes they will degrade the performance of stuff.
Bluetooth can actually learn what frequencies are being used by other Bluetooth devices and hop to a whole other set of frequencies to stay out of the way. Another unique feature that we all know and hate, but it's actually really good for us, is Bluetooth pairing. The pairing ensures that connections are actually wanted. Imagine if anyone could connect their Bluetooth keyboard to your cell phone. That would not be so cool. So we have pairing. The first time that a Bluetooth device connects, the device is authenticated using a personal identification number, PIN. Bluetooth supports both 128-bit encryption and PIN authentication. There are three different versions of Bluetooth. Version 1.2, and then we've got enhanced data rate, which goes up to 3 megabits per second, and we've got version 3.0 that's high speed that goes up to 24 megabits per second. I totally want that.
What would you use it for, though? Seriously?
I don't know.
Okay, it's a Geraldine thing.
Networking.
It goes fast.
Yeah, I actually had an interesting story. Like, just a quick, a couple months ago, I was setting up my computer in an exhibit, and I was trying to hook up to a Bluetooth Braille display, and fiddling, and couldn't figure out why it wouldn't go, because I was hitting the guys 3 tables away and controlling his Braille display, because they all use the same PIN.
Oh, wow.
That's
fantastic.
And the only way to differentiate between them would have been the MAC address of the Braille display, and yeah, we all know the MAC addresses of our Braille displays, right.
So did he come up to you?
Yeah, he did, actually. He came up to me and he said, I think you're hitting my Braille display because I'm not touching it and it's doing things. So I actually changed the name on mine.
That's awesome.
You can't actually do that on the Brailliance, actually. It won't let you change the name. It's always called...
Security on...
whatever.
Sorry. Security on the network is kind of a joke, really.
No, it's
not
the users.
Really.
It's the users that are the problem. They go 0000 because they can't be bothered. If you actually put in a real PIN, the security would actually make a difference. But everybody goes 0000.
You cannot on the... focus Bluetooth Braille displays either, which is really unfortunate because otherwise I actually really like it, but you can't change its Bluetooth name.
Well, I guess I think you're going to be the only blind person in the room.
Yeah, I don't always like security because if you get a headset from your friend, like I did a Bluetooth headset, and I couldn't find the model number on the headset to find the manual to find the actual default PIN key that connected to the headset, so it was very interesting.
Did you end up finding it?
Usually
it's
4 zeros or 1.
I think it was 0000.
It
one,
usually
two, three,
is.
Four.
Are you trying to four?
Is the other common one?
Yes, almost always all zeros, 1, 2, 3, 4 are all ones. Or
yep.
Occasionally all 9.
Is
yeah,
that yummy?
It just makes it a little bit interesting.
Or 90210, just to be
contrary.
Yes, it is.
Oh, good.
No, that one actually just drops the
up.
Connection without warning and then runs off and complains to all its friends if the PIN code's 90210.
It goes and sleeps with other headsets.
Yeah, 90210 will actually connect a different headset than the one you were trying to pair.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We've got another type of wireless communication, and this is Bluetooth's underpowered sibling called infrared, or IR. IR transmits data using
underpowered
LEDs.
Underpowered and line of sight.
Not necessarily, but usually. This transmits data using LEDs and receives data using photodiodes. IR is not regulated because it's so underpowered, but the Infrared Data Association, IRDA, defines the specifications for IR communications. There are four types of IR networks. Line of sight. The signal is transmitted only if there is a clear obstructed view between the devices. This is most infrared devices. Scatter. The signal is bounced off ceilings and walls. Reflective. The signal is sent to an optical transceiver and is redirected to the receiving device. And broadband optical telepoint. The transmission can handle high-quality multimedia requirements. It is ideal for connecting laptops to multimedia projectors, PDAs, printers, remote controls, and wireless mouse or keyboards that are very close by.
Has anybody ever noticed that you always find that when you're trying to change the channel on the TV that the dog gets in the way of the infrared remote?
Yep.
No.
Not
really.
Usually the dog for me, but yeah.
It's usually me not pointing it exactly in the right spot.
That's an interesting point, actually. We had a vision impaired person who was facing completely the wrong way, pressing buttons on her remote control. It wasn't anybody on here at the moment, and was wondering why it wouldn't change channel. And I sort of had to explain to her that you actually have to turn this way and point it at where your amplifier is. And look, now it goes.
Okay. Okay.
I'm thinking of just getting one of those voice-activated remotes, leaving it on a table, pointing at the TV,
fantastic.
And go, okay, speak. And they're not, currently not too expensive either, like 30, 40 bucks.
I will often get up in the morning, half asleep, to flick on the air conditioner or heat, and it'll take me a couple of tries to figure out which end I want to point where. When an IR device is detected, Windows installs the appropriate driver and you're able to use the device. The limitations of IR include IR light cannot penetrate ceilings or walls, IR signals are susceptible to interference and delusion by strong light sources, such as fluorescent lighting. Cool. Scatter IR devices are able to connect without line of sight, but data transfer rates are lower and the distances are shorter. If you're shorter than a meter, I don't know how much closer you're going to be able to get. IR distances should be 3 feet, 1 meter or less when used for computer communications. Any questions on IR and all of that? IR, of course, has no security because you seriously have to be right in front of it.
I can't remember the last time I saw a laptop with IR. It's been at least 5 years.
My laptop
has IR. Yep, my laptop from 06 has one. 07, actually.
It pretty much got supplanted.
How many of you actually used IR? Because I never did, and I hated it as soon as I saw it, and I wanted it to go away.
I did for a drink on the Braille.
When Tox first came out, that's how you had to install it on a lot of these old Nokia
3600
stuff. And yeah, that I used it a lot then.
I used it to print from the Braille note. I also used it for something. Oh, we wanted to get, there's a remote control program for the phones, and we wanted to put it on our phones and change the channel on the TV. At our bar to like crazy stuff like the soap opera channel and watch the reaction of the bartender, the patrons kind of freaked out because we had this little local bar.
You should have just got a Pac-Man.
That program
My friend
still exists.
Who can see actually it's has called... one on her pocket PC, or had one on her pocket PC, and it had a database of all different kinds of remote, and she could see, so she could just say, okay, this is a Philips TV, and let's try hitting off and turning it off, and it was fun.
There is actually, that database comes from the Lurk Linux Infrared Remote Control software, and you can actually steal the Lurk database. And there is a phone call, there is a program called, it's by Siloc, Total IR, and I think it still runs on multiple phones, and it is accessible apparently.
Yeah, that is one good. That is one way I found the PacMate to be extremely useful, because I don't know about the Braille note, but the IR port in the PacMate is very, very feelable and very big. So you know exactly where it is.
Yeah, they never put that functionality onto the Braille note. I was always sad that they didn't, because that was the one really cool thing I liked about the PacMate.
We did have a really big blindy feelable infrared port, to be fair, but it just didn't do very much.
Will actually wrote some software for the Eureka that would control his television by shoveling stuff out the serial port to an infrared transmitter he built.
Lord.
I know. Alright, any other questions, comments about infrared before we move on to a different wireless technology?
You can hold infrared controls up to radios and they go to AM radio and it sounds funny. Sorry, I had to go there.
Fair enough.
You can hold what up to AM radio?
An FM remote, or an infrared remote.
Oh. Ah, fair enough.
Do I things have infrared ports?
No.
No.
Yeah, pretty much anything held up to an AM radio will cause it to do interesting things.
Yeah, actually, if you get bored... Much fun playing with. If you get bored, find somebody who's got a camera with an old-school flash in it, the ones that actually charge up and go... and shoot that off near an infrared radio, an AM radio. That will be hours of fun. If you can find it on
camera... I
think
my grandma might have one.
That's okay, interesting that they actually have that sound effect on CSI.
Okay, but they also
the
have... Yeah,
the flash.
Yeah, it also has... It sort of makes this... noise. It's really bizarre. So if you can find an old camera with a flash, it's worth doing.
The Braille lights make some interesting sounds near an AM radio, too.
Anyway. Right. Enough about AM radios. We need to, move on. Because, we can talk about AM radios after class. Alright. Now we will talk about and review cellular technology. If you want more, you can look at some tables in this chapter. And you can look at Module 8, where they... No, Module 6 talks about this as well. But we're going to have a review. This has been around since the 1970s. It used to be used for voice only, but now can carry video and data signals as well. It is not as fast as most cable or DSL connections, but it's faster than ours right now since we're shaped. But it is still considered high speed. This allows you to use the internet on your phone as well as using the cellular network to access the internet on your laptop. To do this, you will need a computer with a built-in cellular modem, a cellular card, a dongle, or my personal favorite, a Bluetooth serial modem. You're gonna be able to Bluetooth your cell phone to your computer, which is what I do, and it's fabulous. Your method of choice must support one or all of these. Global System for Mobile Communication, GSM. This is a worldwide cellular network. General Packet Radio Service, GPRS. Data service for users of GSM Quad Band. Allows a cellular phone to operate on all four GSM frequencies. 850, 900, 1800, and 1900 megahertz. Short message service, SMS, text messages, multimedia messaging service, MMS, multimedia messages, enhanced data rate for GSM, Evolution, Edge, provides
Does
increased
anyone
data...
Anyone use MMS?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can send text messages. You can send voice messages. you can actually send a voice message between compatible Nokias, and it uses the inbuilt phone codec, so they're really small, and you can actually just go, "Hi, I so can't be bothered texting you, so I'm not sending you this voice message, and it'll turn up on your phone, bye." And that was exactly what would happen. It was great.
Or you could call them.
Yeah, you could do that too.
I know that takes all the fun.
No, but it was 50 cents. It was 50 cents to send the voice message. It was cheaper. This was important over here. If you called them, it was like a 40 cent flag fall, and then you had to talk to the person, and they might talk back. So messages were cheap.
Oh, God, the horror!
Yeah, something like that.
On the other hand, we still get charged for everything that comes in, and they don't. So don't get too excited, Drew.
Okay, this improves data reliability. Oh, I just totally lost my place. Okay, evolution data optimized, EVD, faster download rates, and hey, here's one that looks familiar, high speed downlink packet access, or HSDPA, provides enhanced Generation 3 access speed. Cellular speeds have increased over the years. Now the fastest is, I believe, 7.5 Mbps. You're not going to get any questions on the generations of cellular data outside of possibly maybe one or two on this quiz. I don't even think that. But it's definitely not near final, so don't worry about it.
It's a mess. Don't look up the Wikipedia article if you would like to retain your sanity. It's really not cool.
Pretty much.
Any questions on cellular data, how to do anything with it? You need a SIM card if you're using GSM. Just saying. But, yeah.
It's also worth mentioning...
I'm just...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Karen.
I was just going to say I'm so glad it's not in our final.
No!
It's really handy, though. I actually use it for situations where the work firewall won't let you do something, and you plug in your mobile dongle and you're online and things start working. That's what I did with mine. And in fact, when the internet falls out at the association, we've got mobile dongles that we plug in and we get online. It's quite handy. Be aware, however, that if you get a cheap dongle on from your phone company or whatever, it's usually locked to that phone company. And you normally have to pay $100 to unlock it if you are unlocking it legally. I'm not going to talk about any other methods of unlocking. But they do sell them at a significantly reduced price because they are locked to a particular service provider. So you can't chuck your mate's SIM in from a different provider, speaking.
Oh, one other thing about the final. Everything from 11 onwards is not in your final, unless you decide you're going A+ and you want to take the 11 to 16 final, which if you're thinking of going A+, you totally should, just for test practice. And you'll get shorter times on it and everything, so you'll actually have to hurry and take it, and yeah. But it doesn't count towards your grade, so it doesn't matter. It's just practice. Okay, next we'll cover Wi-Fi. Remember that Wi-Fi is covered by the IEEE 802.11 standard? That's testable. And we are going to review the standards. 802.11a, it was released in 1999. Maximum data rate, 54 megabits per second. Maximum range is 100 feet or 30.5 meters. This uses 5.0 gigahertz frequency. 802.11b, released in 1999 as well. Maximum data rate, 11 Mbps. Maximum range, 100 feet or 30.5 meters. Uses 2.4 gigahertz standard. 802.11g, release date was in 2003. Maximum data rate, 54 megabits per second.
Can you shove that microphone up a little?
Maximum range, 100 feet, or 35.5 meters. This also uses 2.4 gigahertz, which is backward compatible with B, but not with A, because A uses 5.0 gigahertz. 802.11n, released in 2009. you could get draft devices before that, but it wasn't actually ratified until 2009. Maximum data rate is 540 megabits per second. Maximum data rate allowed 165 feet or 50.3 meters. Uses 2.4 and or 5.0 gigahertz, so compatible, backward compatible with everything if you have the right modem. Some modems only allow you to get the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum. Love, N.
Now, there is actually a problem. There was a patent war between CSIRO and everyone else, and for a time there were certain Acer wireless cards and a few others that would actually support A and G, but not... Oh, no, they'd support B and N, but they wouldn't support G, which was nasty. Mm? Yeah, they'd do B and N, but they wouldn't do G.
Okay. Satellite connections are used in rural areas where DSL and cable are not available. It is expensive to set up and not as fast as dial-up cable or DSL, so it's basically used as a last resort. Uploads and downloads are performed on separate channels. Uploads can be done via satellite or phone line, depending on the connection and who your company is and how they do things. Download speeds are in the 500 megabits per second range, while uploads are at about 50 kbps, meaning that this is an asymmetrical connection. There are some advantages, including two-way high-speed internet access available in remote areas, quick file downloads, and the satellite dish can be used for TV access. Satellite connections must be set up properly in order to work. Even when they are set up right, weather or other obstructions may cause them not to work. it's always those nice snowy days when you want to sit in front of your satellite television or do the internet, when your satellite dish fills up with snow and it doesn't work. And then you just get to sit there and stare at each other.
You get to watch the snow.
Oh, yippee. The equipment needed for satellite connections is a 24-inch, 610-millimeter satellite dish, modem for uplink and downlink, coaxial cable, and connectors. And connectors. Yes, there we go.
Okay, I'm off to get Grace a drink. I'll be back.
All right. Any questions on satellite? Here you go.
They've actually made it a lot better. I have satellite TV, and we've had some half-decent snowstorms, and it hasn't gone out yet this winter, so I don't know what they've done, but they seem to be a lot more resistant to those things.
Dude, that's a miracle. Like, that's pretty awesome, because I remember when we had our satellite TV, it would just go out, and they'd have to be replacing crap all the time, and then the thing would just fill up with snow, and yeah, it was not so cool. Okay, we have an activity now. We're going to play a round of Name That Technology. So everybody in your chat windows, and don't answer until I tell you to, because it'll take people a second to write. And we're going to play Name That Technology. All right, the first technology creates a wireless personal area network. Okay, everybody answer now. Anyone else? Is anyone else awake? Okay. The answer is Bluetooth. Bluetooth creates a wireless personal area network of up to 7 devices. All right, guys, come on, wake up. Next one. Short-range technology that uses LEDs to transmit data. Okay, answer now. And you are right if you said infrared. Absolutely. Okay, allows data transmission over wireless telephone network. Answer now. Anyone else want to go? Guess not. That would be mobile or cell phone or any of that. So everybody's right. And the last one, ideally suited for remote locations.
Can you repeat that, please, Grace?
Ideally suited for remote locations. And that would be satellite. That's absolutely right. Okay, well done, everybody. Just to see if you're awake, and half of us aren't, which is all right, because, you know what, I've been up since 5:30, and I'm barely awake myself. All right, now we'll talk about repairing laptops. We have a couple of categories of replacement components for laptops. The first is customer replaceable units, or CRUs. These things are components such as batteries, and they say RAM, but honestly, I'd love to see some of the people I work with replace RAM. It can be difficult on some laptops, even for me. The next category is field replaceable units, or FRUs. These must be replaced by a service center, certified tech, or the manufacturer. These include motherboards, definitely, LCD screens, most probably, and keyboards. Well, I've replaced a keyboard, and Gateway pretty much told me to do it, so not necessarily. The brand and model of the laptop determines what is a CRU and what is an FRU, also the customer's capabilities. Any questions or comments on that? Carrie is saying in the background, some keyboards can be a cow to replace, which is totally true. As I said, it just depends on your make and model of laptop.
A lot of them now have hard drive, customer replaceable hard drives where it's just two screws and then this little bay that it slides into, and they made that.
Yeah, those are fantastic. Some of the Asuses do, but then on some of the netbooks are actually going away from that because Microsoft was yelling at them about actually having replaceable hard drives, that people could upgrade their netbooks to have bigger hard drives, and then they wouldn't buy the regular computers or regular Windows operating systems. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I actually have two netbooks. My 1000H, you undo the four screws on the back, and there's the memory and the hard drives, but my 1005... when you undo this nice little convenient user removable hole on the back, there's only RAM. And for a hard drive, it's a big operation. You have to take out a bunch of screws. And
oh, it's horrible. Yeah, Will and Gemma were talking about that. So
we actually, I actually checked up the logistics of this a while ago, and apparently when Vista was being pushed out and rolled out and Microsoft was still trying to sell lots of copies of Vista, the maximum hardware configuration you could actually register an XP Home OEM license for on a netbook was 160 gig of disk and 1 gig of RAM. But apparently they upped that to 250 recently, but it was actually 160 and 1 gig, which is why you saw a lot of netbooks shipping with 1 gig of RAM by default, because Microsoft wouldn't grant them the OEM license if they had 2 gig in them.
Okay, a repair center can provide services on a laptop made by different manufacturers, or a repair center may specialize in a specific brand and be considered an authorized dealer for warranty work and repair. The following are common repairs performed by a local repair center: hardware and software diagnostics, data transfer and recovery, hard drive installation and upgrades, RAM, drive installations, keyboard and fan replacements, internal laptop fan replacements, internal laptop cleaning, LCD screen repair, LCD inverter and backlight repair. Most repairs to LCD displays must be performed in a repair center. The repairs include replacing the LCD screen, the backlight that shines through the screen to illuminate the display, and the inverter that produces the high voltage required by the backlight. If the backlight has failed, the screen is only visible when you are looking at it from an angle. This is very important for us to keep in mind because, you know what, up till right now reading this sentence, well, actually a few hours ago, I did not know that. So there you go. make sure you know what your warranty covers before your computer breaks. I have a story about yesterday. We got this call, and Carol knows this person because she sent him to us. And he called us, and he said, yeah, I'll be over in 45 minutes. But before he came over, he called up Toshiba and asked if they could possibly fix it because it should be under their warranty. And they're like, if it's a hardware problem, we'll be happy to fix it. But if it's a software problem, we don't cover your data or anything you have done it to your hard drive. So if it's a software problem, we're going to charge you a call-out fee to look at it and diagnose it. And he jumped up and down, got really angry, and basically said he wanted to take legal action against them, and then showed up at our place. So it was pretty fantastic. So you really need to read the terms and conditions and understand what is in your warranty, what they'll cover. Will they back up your data and put it onto a new hard drive? What are they responsible for? What's your responsibility and what is theirs? Very, very important so that you don't get into a situation like this person did.
Is it fixed?
No, it's sitting on our table right now, getting a smart test done on it, but we do have all the data backed up.
Oh, that's the main thing. That's all he was worried about.
Yeah, no, that's all taken care of. But yeah, no, we did, when he got over here, explain to him why they might have a call-out fee and try to explain to him that, yes, the terms and conditions of his warranty were up on their website and all this. If you're going to get an extended warranty and that salesman is trying to push it on you, if you're really worried about what's in there, have them read it to you. If they refuse to read it to you, don't buy it. It's only off their commission, honestly. And they may be trying to do something dodgy. So if you're really worried, have them read it to you. If they want you to buy the warranty enough, they will read it to you, honestly. Or they can get you a copy off the website to read and let you look at it and come back to them. Before you repair a laptop, do three things. Check the terms of the warranty to make sure that you are not invalidating it by doing repairs yourself. It was Asus that used to have a problem with you replacing the RAM. If you replaced your RAM, you invalidated the warranty, and then everybody jumped up and down and screamed and said, look, it's one screw on the back of the panel. We should be able to do that ourselves. And so they relented. make sure to remove the power cord and batteries and all of your peripherals before you open this up. You may want to add or replace computer components because of damage to or improve functionality or to increase performance. Make sure that the components you select are physically and electrically compatible with a working slot or port on your PC and that they will work with your current OS or other installed devices. Buy parts from reputable manufacturers and read the warranty information of the computer components and your computer carefully. Now, as I'm saying, we're talking about reputable manufacturers. I have a story as to why you probably shouldn't buy certain components on eBay. Something had happened to the cord on my laptop charger. And I bought a new one from eBay, plugged it in, charging it up, all good. I'm sitting there talking on Skype or something, and all of a sudden I hear this loud bang! And I'm like, I don't know what in the world that was. I'm looking, seeing if something had possibly dropped on the floor. I don't know what it is. A little while later, I noticed that my laptop wasn't actually charging. I looked at the adapter and noticed that it smelled kind of smoky, and then realized what had happened. One of the cheap transformers had blown on my charger, and I had wasted $20, and now needed to get another new charger.
And you're fantastic. Lucky that that's all that happened.
I am lucky that that's all that happened. So buying maybe a memory card or thumb drive off of eBay, yeah, you can do that. A mouse, yeah, okay. Probably not a power supply. Just be careful of what you buy and make sure that it is not... What you pay is what you... you get what you pay for. So just be very careful about that. There are two categories of computer components. They are retail packaged or... and the retail package actually comes with the documentation, a full warranty, cables, mounting hardware, drivers, and software. It comes with everything you'd need. The second category is OEM components, which are sold without packaging. OEM components require you to go locate the documentation, software, drivers, and any additional hardware that may be needed. These components are usually less expensive and offer a shorter warranty period than a similar retail package to components. Using OEM components can result in substantial savings when you're doing upgrades in bulk or additional support isn't needed. We'll buy a lot of OEM parts, actually, for when we replace things. Any questions on the differences between the retail box and OEM? Oh, I've got to say something about OEM, apparently. OEM software can only be purchased with hardware. So if you're buying an OEM copy of Windows, you need to actually buy computer hardware as well with it.
In the old computer stores, what they used to do before Microsoft tightened down the restrictions was, you're still keyed by the way, oh there you go, was to actually sell you a mouse mat with your software purchase, but then Microsoft tightened down the restrictions and said must be sold with system board, hard drive, or RAM purchase.
I think you have to buy two computer components or something to get it.
Does anybody know what the... I can't remember the exact requirement. Yeah, I think Grace is right. I think it does have to be two. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I think technically...
in order to do what?
OEM license term, it's two, but I mean, I don't know about anywhere else, but here there are still lots of retail outlets that will sell you OEM packages with nothing.
There is also one gotcha with OEM copies of Windows that people should know about. When you buy an OEM copy of Windows, it is licensed to one computer, one specific activation footprint as far as a particular hardware configuration. If you try to move your OEM install of Windows to another machine, Microsoft may and has in the past disallowed the activation request.
Okay, it's 10:30. we will go into more of your actual components, when you might want to replace components, and all that good stuff tomorrow. But since we're doing two lectures a week, 10:30 is usually our cutoff time. So we will dismiss now if there are no other questions.
Got no other questions.
Fantastic. I need to talk to you about your lab at
some
point.
With Skype 5 at some point.
Okay.
Because I've got the scripts and I can't figure out how do I go back and look at my call history. And I know when I hear it, I'm going to feel so dumb.
Recent.
But I can't figure out how to...
It's the recent...
View recent.
Recent.
Oh, is that where it is? Okay.
Yep.
Told you.
It's all good.